Welcome to Unexpected Turns.
Pictures of people urinating, which, you know, in cycling is like, you know, people do that all the time off the, like, on the bike. And I was like, wow, I can't believe I have so many photos of these, because like in the beginning, when you first see it, you're like, oh, wow, I can't believe they're doing that. And I would take a picture. You know, I had like pictures of Brad Wiggins doing it and like the whole Peloton and all this stuff. So I was like, okay, I'm going to post these on Instagram. And
hello, and thank you for joining us today. Beth, Julie, and I will be talking with Les Morales, whose life has had more than a few unexpected turns. Described by his colleague as a bit like Superman and Clark Kent, he has two very different roles, which we'll hear about shortly.
Hello.
Hey, Anne.
Hi there, Les.
Nice to meet you all.
Nice to meet you too.
Yeah, so I'm actually, I'm in Cleveland, Ohio right now at my sister's house, and it's currently snowing outside.
And is that water beyond?
That's Lake Erie.
Wow. So gorgeous.
Yeah,
wow.
It's very cold. -4 Celsius, I think, or -2.
Oh, is it? Oh, it looks stunning though, Les. What a lovely backdrop.
Mm. Oh, thank you. Yeah, I try to pick the the most nice looking one for this.
That was my first question, Les, actually. I was asking you where you are and why are you there at the moment?
The town that I'm in is called Avon Lake. It's about 30 minutes from Cleveland, Ohio. And I'm here because my mom had her hip replacement surgery.
Oh, wow.
And my brother-in-law is an orthopedic surgeon. He didn't perform the surgery, but one of his colleagues did, who's like one of the best hip surgeons here at the Cleveland Clinic, one
Amazing.
Of the best hospitals in the US. So that's why they came here. I'm basically just here to like help out and visit.
Yeah,
that's nice.
I don't know how much I can tolerate this cold weather.
I've literally just come back from Spain, Les, and it's a shock, I can tell you. You can tell I've got my thick jumpers on and everything.
Oh, yeah. I'll be heading there in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, to get ready for the Gran Fondo, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I still got, that's actually why I'm not wearing a sweater right now, because I just got off the stationary bike.
Oh,
I was just going to ask you, Les, I absolutely love your photos, as you know, they're amazing, all of them, particularly this.
Oh, thank you. Particularly the ones of John.
Actually, particularly the surf ones. I really, really like the surf ones.
Okay.
I mean, you obviously surf, do you?
I do. I haven't done it in a while, though. Most people know me as a surf photographer, but most of my professional work, I would say the majority of it has been in cycling.
How did you get into photography, though? I mean, where did that come from?
Well, first of all, so I didn't even study it. I went to school for electrical engineering and computer science.
Oh, very different.
I knew I kind of had an affinity for the arts, because when I was in high school, I took three art classes, and I really liked them, and I enjoyed them more than I expected. Fast forward to like my first year working. For whatever reason, I wanted a camera. I was like, hey, I've never owned a camera.
So you're working as an electrical engineer now?
I was working in software, doing like engineering support stuff. So I was like, I want to buy a camera. And I didn't know what to get. And I was asking some friends. And then they're like, oh, just get, you know, this DSLR or whatever, any entry level one. So I was like, okay. So I saw an ad of somebody selling a camera, and I was like, I'm going to go check it out, because that year I had an $800 tax refund. And I met this guy, and he's like, hey, I have this camera. And I was like, I don't know anything about them. And he's like, well, this is a good camera. And I was like, cool. But then he brought out another lens that he was trying to sell. And he was like, this would be a good one too, if you want to have a second lens. And I was like, well, what's that for? Like, don't you only need one?
Yeah.
And he was like, how far do you plan on taking this? I said, not very far. I just want a camera. But then I was like, but I'll buy the other lens too, because, you know, whatever. All my tax rebate. Yeah. And then I had the camera, and I didn't really use it a whole lot. And then later that year, I had like, basically like this relationship I was in, like kind of ended poorly. I kind of wanted to like take my mind off that and basically fill the void. So I started using the camera a lot more. I would go to like the UCSB cycling team, which is what I was a part of. Every Wednesday, they have this like crit practice where they ride laps around like this research park just to practice like racing and stuff. So I would go to this crit practice. It was like 5:30, and I would just take pictures, and then I would post them on Facebook and tag everyone, and everyone would be like, oh, cool, thanks for the pictures. And I did that, I think, I don't know, for a few months. And I was like getting better at it, but not really paying attention. Just, you know, obviously, like the more you do something, the better you will become. So then at one point, the former coach for the UCSB cycling team, I guess he was still coaching at the time, but at the time he was on Jelly Belly pro cycling team. He and I had become friends after college, just because I was more one. I suppose he said I was one of the more mature people, but I don't know how he thought. But one day he was like, hey, so Road Magazine will be doing a feature about me, about like kind of my life in Santa Barbara and how I train and whatnot. And I was wondering if you'd be interested in taking some pictures for that. And I didn't really know what that meant. Naturally, I just said, yeah, sure, of course. He gave me like a schedule. He's like, hey, so like come to this gym at 6 p.m. or whatever. And then after that, we're going to go over to this one guy's house. I came and I was just doing my thing, taking pictures of him doing these exercises. And I briefly met the editor, but I didn't know who he was when he told me who he was. And I didn't really understand what was going on, to be honest. And then at the end, I was like, wait, so what are we doing these photos for? And he's like, oh, this is going to be in Road Magazine. I was like, wait, like in the magazine? He's like, yeah, like in print. I was like, oh, no way. I remember that night when I uploaded the photos, I got really like careful with editing. I made sure everything was like perfect. And then I sent them over to him. I think it was a month or 2 months later, it went into print. And then he and I went out for tacos, and then he gave me a copy of the magazine. And I opened it up and I saw like my photos and I saw my name. And it was probably the coolest thing like in the world at that moment. I was like, wow, I can't believe I have this. And I have like a caption in there that I had written, which is funny because I was in like school, I was the worst writer. And I was like, oh, now I have published work. After that, that kind of basically blew the door open for me. Mm. You know, I'd say like, oh yeah, I'm a contributor to Road Magazine. Everyone would be like, oh, cool. Yeah, do you want a media pass here? And just from that, I was able to get credentials for the Tour of California and like anything I wanted, basically.
So at what point did you give up your day job?
So at that point, I was still working at this big company. I was not doing a whole lot of like professional work in photography. I was just kind of, you know, every once in a blue moon. And then at some point I left this company to go work at a startup. And so while I was at the startup, I started really getting into like the surf photography stuff. And I bought like a waterproof housing for my camera and started shooting in the water. And that's kind of when I got really into it. One of my really good friends from college was still racing. And he told me one day, he's like, hey, guess what? Our team just got invited to the Vuelta Mexico. And I was like, oh, that's super cool. Like, it's like, I think it was like a 5-day stage race. And I was like, oh, that'd be so cool if I could come and like take photos with you guys. And so he had casually just mentioned me to his team director. And the team director was like, doesn't he work for Road Magazine? And he's like, yeah, he's got a connection there. So then he told him, he said, if he can get us a story in the next issue, like we'll bring him. So I emailed the editor and he's like, oh yeah, that sounds great. Like, how much do you want for the story? And I was like, I don't know. I didn't even know I could make money off this. But I was like, $200? I have no idea. So then they brought me along to this Vuelta Mexico. And it was my first experience seeing how an actual UCI race works, like with multiple stages and transfers and like race hotels and all that stuff. To this day, that's still like my favorite experience working as a cycling photographer, because that really just opened my eyes to how everything, you know, works.
And that was the first time you were paid as well.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess I got paid for the first time I got published in Road, but I had to invoice them and I didn't know about that. But this was the first like, oh, we'll hire you to go to this race to go take pictures. And I was having a blast. Every night I would go down to the dinner in the hotel and eat with everyone, but I would bring my computer with me and I would start, you know, going through the photos. This guy next to me starts pointing at my screen and he was like, hey, that's me. And I looked at him and sure enough, it was the guy I had a photo of on my screen. And this guy was Italian. He didn't really speak English very well, but I knew what he was kind of gesturing and what he wanted. So he gave me his contact info and I emailed him the photo. So when the race ended, I went back to California. I went back to my day job and I got an email from this Italian guy named Christian, who was the general manager of the team that this rider was on. And he was like, hey, Les, really lovely photos from Mexico. Thanks so much for the photos of Leonardo and my team. We like your work. And we were wondering if you are going to be in Philly next month, the Philadelphia Cycling Classic. Mm-hmm. And I said, thanks for the kind words, but I'm actually I told him, I said, I have a full-time job. This isn't really something I do all the time. It's kind of, you know, once in a while. And he was like, oh, okay, well, if you do end up over there, let us know. Like, they said, cool, I don't think it's going to happen, but I would love to come to Italy sometime. Just like threw that out there, you know? And then he replied yeah. back with like, we'll work on something. And that was it.
Wow.
So then I continued my day job. But then the following year, when they were going to run the Vuelta Mexico again, this time the team director of that amateur team, he and I were friends from the previous trip and he wanted me to work with his team. So I was ecstatic. I was like, oh yeah, absolutely. Like I had a great time last year. I'm totally down, blah, blah, blah. And then I got an email from Christian and was like, hey, are you going to Mexico? And I said, yeah. He's like, we're going too, but we're not sure what's going on because we haven't gotten any confirmation from the race. So then that Friday night at like 9 p.m., the race was supposed to start on Sunday.
Yeah.
So Friday night at 9 p.m., we find out via Twitter that the race had been canceled, but I didn't really know, you know, the details. I was just like, oh, what? This race got canceled. Now I'm not going on this trip anymore and I have to go to work next week. So I was a little disappointed. So that weekend, I went and bought a Vespa, you know, to drive around. And I had already planned this. And then I bought this like really expensive blender. So I made some pretty big purchases that weekend. So Sunday night, I emailed my boss and I told him like, hey, the race got canceled. I'm going to be coming to work this week. And then I got no response. Our Monday comes and I come into work. I sat down and I was telling everyone like, hey, I got this Vespa over the weekend because I've been talking about it with them. And everyone seemed kind of like a little somber and like not really like talkative. And I was like, oh, it must be Monday. Everyone's in a bad mood. So then my boss comes up to me and he's like, hey, can you talk for a minute? And I was like, yeah, sure. So we go in this room and we're talking and he's like, hey, what happened with the race? I told him the whole fiasco. And then he's like, oh, I heard you got like a new scooter. So I was talking about that. And so I'm just ranting for like 30 minutes about like what I did over the weekend.
Yeah.
And then finally I was like, wait, so what's up? Am I finally getting my raise? Because I was waiting for a raise because of some funding we were waiting for, because we were kind of tight on funds as startups are. And then he goes, well, this sucks, but we have to let you go. And I was like, wait, what? So in my mind, I was like, what did I just hear? I couldn't even believe it. Because, you know, completely unexpected.
Spent all that money.
Yeah. And immediately I'm like, wait, I just bought this Vespa. I bought this blender. I like didn't go to Mexico and now I'm getting laid off. Like, what's going on? Stop the bleeding. And he knew it was like an awkward situation for the both of us. So he was like, I don't know what you want to do. Like, if you want to just walk out the back, I can deliver your stuff to you later. And I was like, no, I'm just going to walk out through the front.
Why not?
I picked up my stuff and I closed my computer and I was like, all right, well, I guess I won't be seeing you guys. And then everyone just like, take care. And then I like walked out, called my friend and I was like, hey, what are you doing right now? And he's like, it's Monday, I'm at work. And I was like, let's go to the wine bar right now. And I told him, I said, I just lost my job. And he was like, I can meet you in like 45 minutes. So then like, I think it was like the next day, I didn't know what to do. I emailed the Italian guy and I said, dude, I just lost my job and I don't know what to do. And he goes, do you want to come to Italy?
Wow.
And then I was like, yeah, I want to come. And he's like, when can you come? And I said, tomorrow.
Can I bring my Vespa?
Yeah. So a couple of days later, then he's like, yeah, can you send me a copy of your passport? And I was like, that's kind of sketchy. I don't really want to do that because I'd never met this guy. I don't even know what he looks like. I was kind of hesitant, but then I was like, you know what? What more do I have to lose at this point? So the next day or 2 days later, I get an email with like a flight itinerary that's all in plain text. And I was like, okay, this is weird. I'm flying to Istanbul. Then I have a 12-hour layover. And then I'm going to Pisa after that. I'm like, huh, weird.
Oh.
So then I was like, well, I guess we'll find out. So I packed all my bags. And when I got to like LAX International Airport, I was kind of like sweating because I was like, I hope this is a real ticket.
Yeah. So
I handed the lady my passport and she starts like doing stuff on the computer and then hands it back to me. And she's like, all right, here's your boarding pass. And I was like, oh, this is real.
Cool. Oh, it's for real.
I was like, great. And when I got there, I was like so excited from just the whole trip. And I was like, okay, I don't know what this guy looks like. If he doesn't pick me up, I'll figure out, you know, my way for 2 weeks. And I literally waited, I think 5 or 10 minutes. And then finally this guy comes up to me. He's like, hey, Les, it's Christian. And I was like, oh, you're a real person.
How old were you at this time, Les?
So this was 2015. That would mean I was 27.
Right.
Yeah. And then I took photos with this team for this Italian stage race called the Coppi Bartoli. And that was the first time I saw Primoz Roglic. Being the new person there, I was like studying all the riders and who each person was. And
yeah,
I remembered his name because it was kind of a unique name. Crazy, he's like a contender now. So after the races were over, they were really happy with my work and they're like, we want you to come back. After that, I started coming back. I came back again for like 3 months at a time. Through that, I made connections with other teams and other people. And then, you know, I'd be in the US and Canada and, you know, Utah. And that's when I, you know, saw John racing with Cannondale. Yeah. So then after basically 2 years of, you know, back and forth, I kind of got burned out a little bit. And I started thinking about like, what's the long-term goal here? Like, where's my future going to be? Am I going to have a family at some point? Because this isn't really sustainable. I was really like, you know, hustling just to make ends meet as a photographer and journalist. Mm. All the work of being self-employed was a lot, you know, just invoicing people, doing all the accounting.
Yeah.
And since I was still kind of new, I was bending backwards, you know, just to get like connected with a client. Like I'd work with brands and I would be so lenient just so they'd be happy. And then I could maintain that connection and get a bigger deal with them later on, that I kind of wasn't being fair to myself. It's like, you know, at the end of the day, I still have to get paid.
Make a living,
exactly. And I had a hard time kind of reconciling that. I was like, oh, it's fine. You know, they're want to make sure this company's happy, you know, but then it's like, oh, well, I still gotta pay my bills. I kind of was like, I really miss surf photography. Like cycling stuff is cool, but like, I didn't really like it a lot at the time.
Oh, interesting.
So then I ended up moving back to California and I started blasting like job applications. And then the second place I applied at ended up hiring me, which is where I'm working at now.
This is back doing what?
This is now doing software development.
Right.
So are you still doing the photography?
Yeah. So when I got back to California and I started working, I was ecstatic because I was like, oh, now I have this stable income. You know, I have a pretty competitive salary. I don't have to worry about collecting money. Like I'm going to get paid on the minute every 2 weeks and it's just going to go directly to my thing. And I don't have to worry about anything. I have benefits and everything. And then I was so like, kind of like, well, not, yeah, I guess like burned out from it that I didn't really want to take pictures anymore, or at least like I wanted to take a break from it. I just wanted to like chill out. So then I was focusing primarily only on surf stuff. Beginning of 2017 was when I probably got my biggest accomplishment as a surf photographer. One of my photos was featured in Surfer magazine. Well, I had been contributing to their print for a while, but one of my photos was selected for the like top 10 photos of 2016 when they published this issue in 2017. And I was pretty stoked about that. Because, you know, all the other guys had been like world renowned photographers. And I didn't even know until like I saw the article come out and I was like, oh, I can't wait to see these pictures. And I was just scrolling through and then I saw mine. I was like, wait, no, this isn't real. Like, did they make a mistake? Like, how did this get in there?
Wow. And you'd started work as a software engineer by then.
Yeah, it's similar to a software engineer in the sense that we're still working in the code and stuff, but it's a slightly different roles.
Right.
So I was pretty stoked on it. And and then that's when I was like, decided I was done with cycling stuff and was only doing surfing. And then COVID started. And so when we shifted to working from home, I knew I had a whole lot of video and photos from over the years that I never really sorted through, just because like when I was working with a team, they just needed a few photos for social media instantly.
Yeah.
So I went all the way back from the beginning and went through every single photo that I ever took for cycling. And then I started making all these galleries of like pictures of mechanicals. And I even made one that everyone liked. It was called like pictures of people urinating, which, you know, in cycling is like, you know, people do that all the time on the bike. Because like in the beginning, when you first see it, you're like, oh, I can't believe they're doing that. And I would take a picture. You know, I had like pictures of Brad Wiggins doing it. And like, so I was tagging all these riders. And if this had been any other normal year, nobody wouldn't have noticed.
No.
But particularly in, you know, in Europe and Spain, where they couldn't leave their houses, they were stuck on their Zwift and stuff. They were noticing this stuff and people were like, oh, cool. Yeah. Thanks for this photo. And I'm like, oh yeah, you must be really bored to be looking at my message. And then when I was going through all these photos, I started remembering like the context of the photo, of like what was happening, like the adventure of like traveling with a team and eating like great Italian food and meeting all these people. And then I started thinking like, man, I really miss doing that. Mm. And this realization, what I really love is like the adventure that involves documenting with my camera. So whether that be going to a bike race or going and covering like a trail running race in the Alps or going on a surf trip or anything like that, I realized that it doesn't really matter what I'm doing as long as I'm doing the action of capturing the moment with my camera in a journalist like documentary style. So
telling the story.
Exactly. Like visual storytelling, I think is the term.
Yeah.
So I was like, I really miss doing this stuff. And I kept in touch with several people. The team director for the Lupus Racing team, I had done a lot of work with them in the US. I started noticing on social media that he was going to Belgium a lot and he was tagging a lot of stuff with this brand called BioRacer. So then in January, he sends me a text and he's like, do you want to come to Cyclocross Worlds? And I said, absolutely. And he said, you know, since I'm working for BioRacer, we sponsor the Belgian Federation and also the Dutch and also Tim Ineos. And he was like, so if you come, you'll have an opportunity. You'll basically be shooting photos of the Belgian national team. And if Tom Pidcock wins, then you'll be taking photos of him. And I didn't even really think about like of any doors being open. I wanted to go out there and hang out with him again and, you know, work together like we did in the old days. So I went there and I got to meet everyone and we all became, you know, good friends. And BioRacer is like a really big, very important brand in Belgium. It's like working for Nike here in the US. So I wanted to make sure like, you know, I was on my A game and I got good photos and I was, you know, did my job well.
Yeah.
And then on Sunday when the elite men's race was happening, the head of like international marketing, I was like, so what's the ideal situation for us here for this race? And he's like, well, it's obviously good if a Belgian rider wins because they'll be wearing our brand. But I think that for us, it would be slightly better if Tom Pidcock won because he races on Ineos and they wear our jersey all year. And we already printed out a world championship jersey for him. So I was like, okay. And then I was like, oh yeah, I said, that would be cool. And he's like, but in the end, we'll win. We always win. And yes. I said, okay, that's true. So two laps to go in the race, you know, he had a pretty big lead and it was at that point, it was obvious that he was going to win unless something dramatic happened.
I was still on the edge of my seat though.
Oh yeah, for sure. And I get this text in the group chat and they're like, Tom's going to win. Get the stuff ready. We're going to have to do a photo shoot. I was already at the finish line reading this text and I was like, oh wow, like this is actually going to happen. I'm going to meet Tom Pidcock and take pictures of him. So then he crossed the finish line and, you know, he did his little Superman thing, which like I got some good photos of that. Everyone was happy. Ineos contacted us and they said they want a photo of him wearing the jersey, but we can't publish it until 24 hours after, you know, he wins. I think we waited like an hour and a half or 2 hours after the finish before he finally came back to his team bus. And then we presented him the jersey and he was super stoked. And he was like, hey, isn't this like bad luck? And we're like, yeah, it is, but he won anyway. So he said, okay, I'm just going to like, you know, shower real quick and then we'll put it on and take the photos. So while he was in the bus showering, we were like, oh, where are we going to do the photos? And they're like, should we do it on the steps? We're on the course. And then the sun was kind of going down. I was like, okay, let's not make this any more complicated than it needs to be. We'll do it right here in this field. The light's good. It'll be easy. It's just a portrait. Easy, done. So it comes out, we give him the jersey and he's like putting it on and I'm just like taking photos of him. And I think we were done in like 20 minutes. One thing that really stuck out to me was after I was done, he said, thank you. And not a lot of people say thank you when I'm like, I mean, I don't expect it, but it's just kind of one of those things, those tiny details of like, oh, hey, thank you. Like really down to earth, like personality.
Yeah.
Everyone was like floored with these photos. Like I made sure I did them perfectly and Ineos was happy. Once Ineos like published these photos and BioRacer published these photos, like everyone was like, dude, like you work for Ineos now? Like that's crazy. And all these people started contacting me. I was like, wow, like I still talk to these guys like, you know, pretty regularly. And so I told them, I said, hey, I'm going to do this Grand Fondo. And they said, oh, yeah, you should definitely, you know, wear some BioRacer stuff. So I threw some ideas at them. And so they're making me a custom speed suit for this Grand Fondo I'm doing in April. And
wow.
So yeah, and that's kind of where we're at now.
Les, you mentioned Barcelona then in Spain, and I believe you'd like to live in Catalonia. Is that right?
Yeah, during the last year, you know, I started kind of thinking about like my future and all the changes with the pandemic, with the cost of living kind of shooting up, like specifically in the county that I live in Santa Barbara. In 2020, our housing, the median house price went up 83%.
Gosh, so, that's crazy.
Yeah, it's pretty ridiculous. I had already given up on buying a home in Santa Barbara a long time ago. The Catalunya area is very similar to where I live.
Stunningly beautiful, isn't it?
Similar geography, climate, and everything.
Perfect for you as well. You know, you've got gorgeous architecture, wonderful beaches, coastline, mountains.
Yeah, totally. I can pretty much do everything in Spain that I can do in California. I love it out there. I love, you know, those Latin-based languages, Italian. I love Spanish. The people are great. The food is amazing.
Do you speak Spanish, Les?
I do, actually, yeah. That was one of the things I learned during COVID.
Yeah, that was useful.
I wondered whether your surname was Spanish, actually, but is that not? Have you had any Spanish heritage there?
According to legend, my great-grandfather came from the south of Spain. But both of my parents were born in the Philippines. In the particular area where they're from, there's actually a lot of people with Spanish names. And I think maybe that was like a hot spot for where the Spanish were. But the dialect that my parents speak, there are a lot of Spanish words as well.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
So how come your parents went to America from the Philippines?
I think this, as the story goes, is my uncle immigrated to the United States. And once he got there, he petitioned green cards for like my dad. So my dad came to the US when he was 24. And then he met my mom. Let's see, they were married in 1985. They moved, you know, to the US when they're relatively young, you know, just because it was a better life. And my mom's a nurse. So there was like this special, some sort of like program to like recruit nurses from other countries.
I think we've had that here as well. In Brighton, I know there's a lot of Filipino nurses.
Yeah, so that's how they ended up here. My sister and I were both born in Canada because at the time it was it still is very expensive to be born in the US. And my parents essentially like could not afford to have us born in the US. So they had relatives in Canada at the time. So my sister and I ended up being born in Vancouver, British Columbia.
Lovely.
But the only drawback is that I cannot run for US president since I was not born in the US.
I'm sure you'd make a good president.
I don't know.
Going back to the photos, you obviously do some really amazing landscape photos as well. I was interested to think, where are you doing those?
Yeah, so I had a really good friend of mine that he's from Park City, Utah, and he's really into like skiing, mountaineering, all this stuff. And every Thanksgiving, we would go visit the national parks like Moab,
all right,
or Arches National Park, Bryce National Park, Zion, and all these places, because during that week, the national parks are very empty. And then, you know, we'd bring our cameras and do these long exposure stuff or just, you know, take pictures. And I absolutely loved this stuff. Made me realize, like, I like just taking pictures of like the adventure, just going out and just like seeing things and how I interpret it and taking pictures. And I think that's kind of where that kind of that motivation, that drive came from.
Would you say that that's what drives you actually producing that visual story?
I like going out and seeing things and exploring and kind of learning in the non-traditional way. And I get a lot of enjoyment out of that. And so I really kind of value these memories.
Mm.
And having photos of them is really a way to like remember them and to kind of like capture those moments. So if I can get like a really cool picture of something that I really like, then to me, I can like show the image and be like, hey, yeah, I was like, oh, that's a cool photo. I'm like, oh yeah, let me tell you the story about what happened here. Like,
so these pictures, I mean, particularly the landscapes ones that really drew me in, where you've got really tiny figures in a vast setting.
Oh yeah.
And that's quite different to see, and you know, you can study it, and then you see these little tiny people in there as well. I just wonder, do you ever think you would write somewhere the story behind each picture, or where it is, for example?
Yeah, so let me just back up a bit. There's a particular photographer that was a surf photographer primarily and then got into this kind of adventure landscape stuff, and he started doing a lot of perspective photos, and I really love that type of stuff rather than the traditional action photo. I like a pulled back setting and just getting the context of what's actually going on, you know, draw conclusions for themselves. And which is funny because at like a finish line at a bike race, everybody's trying to get the picture of like the rider or like the facial expression. And I often like to like take a couple steps back and just take a picture of everybody, which is kind of cool. You know, I love telling the context of like the photo or what I'm thinking or kind of the details and the location, but it goes back to like me not being the best writer. I just like have a hard time putting speech to text. Yeah. Like whenever I see a photo, I always want to know what the story is behind it. So I definitely like sharing those details.
Yeah.
But you know what? I'll take that as feedback. Maybe I'll start, you know, drafting some more stuff when I publish something.
If maybe there was somebody that you could partner up with.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea.
The pictures are the sort of things that you really look at, but you really want to know more, I think.
Yeah.
I love that elemental way you've organized them. And
I think that fits into what you were saying as well, Les, about the fact that you see yourself as a photographer and an artist.
Yeah. And oftentimes I like when I think of the term artist in the traditional sense, I think of somebody like creating something, like painting something or drawing something. And sometimes I'll go to art shows where there's like painters there. And then I end up talking to people and, you know, they have this like artist mentality and this, like the way they describe things, and they're able to like elaborate what's going through the mind. But I think the art actually, now that I think about it, comes when I'm, you know, going through post-production on the photo and I'm like seeing the image. I'm like, okay, like let's crop it a little bit like this and then like get this out of there. And like, I'm enhancing like the image or whatnot. But oftentimes too, like people ask me like, where do you think it would be a good place to take a picture? And I have some general ideas and whatnot, but I really, to be honest, I don't know the picture until I see it.
So yeah, it's quite intuitive really.
Yeah.
So it's difficult, isn't it? You know, thinking about advice you'd give to kind of future aspiring artists, photographers.
Yeah.
It's hard. It's very individual, isn't it? What would you say?
Really, the only advice that I can give is I think it's important to kind of find your niche in things, because to go out and say like, I want to go take pictures of waves or surfers or whatever, it's like, well, the reality is that there's a lot of people that are also doing this kind of thing. Find something that you are good at that's kind of unique. And, you know, everybody is a different person and everyone's got like a different style, and everybody sees and has their own opinions. So if you can harness all of those into, you know, expressing that in art, that kind of magnifies your individual characteristics, I think that's what will make you most successful.
Mm.
Being like a stunt photographer, I think, is kind of something that's unique to me. And
it's special.
Yeah. And like we have like stunt doubles in films where they say like, oh, we need you to like jump off this car or whatnot. It's like, we need you to take pictures of this running race, but you need to be in the race kind of thing. Like, yeah, sure. Like throw me in there. I mean, can you swim in this 30-foot surf? Like, yeah, no problem. Like, I think that's kind of like the direction I'm kind of heading and trying to be one of those kind of like people.
Wow.
And like the cycling and surf stuff is pretty unique. Like there's not a whole lot of people that know a whole lot about, you know, these Italian, Belgian races and also in like California surfing.
So have you got any standout moments from photos that you've taken or places you've been?
Well, I guess recently the stuff with Tom, I think, was definitely a big turning point in my life. That's the first time I was actually like intimately taking photos of a world champion or someone so prominent in the sport. Obviously, I've taken photos of like a lot of pro athletes, you know, just like in a race or whatnot. I have another one that's kind of silly, but in high school, I was never recognized for anything. I was kind of just, you know, typical average student. I never got student of the month or anything. Like I was never the valedictorian or whatnot. But in 2016, I got an email from my high school and they said, you've been, a couple of the faculty members here have nominated you to be featured as one of the alumni that we're going to be doing like a flashback for our next magazine print. I was like, oh,
wow,
cool. So I answered all this stuff and I made it sound like whatever I was doing was really cool. Like sometimes I'm in Hawaii taking surf photos, or like I'm in Italy doing the Giro de Lombardia or whatnot on the back of a motorcycle. But in reality, I was in the Tour of Utah in the middle of the desert, like following the most boring stage. But then they took one of my photos and they printed it on the cover of the magazine.
That must have made you feel very proud.
I was ecstatic. I was like, this is the greatest accomplishment I have ever done. I remember when I got it, I was like, with like this Lupus racing team. I was like, dude, I just made the cover photo of my high school magazine. And they were like, that sounds kind of boring, but whatever. But I was like, oh, you guys have no idea how much this means to me.
Oh, yeah. Wonderful.
It really made me feel good about myself, because in high school, I was just like another student, you know, no one really knew who I was.
Yeah.
I've been meaning to frame the actual like magazine cover, but I haven't done it yet.
You can put together a book of your pictures and include that in it with its story.
Yeah, actually, that's one of my goals, is I want to make like a coffee table book. And I've been wanting to do this for like 8 years and I haven't done it yet.
Yeah, definitely.
It can't have been easy doing what you've done. I mean, what would you say have been some of the biggest obstacles that you've had?
Yeah, I mean, I would say that just like the culture of like the software industry, it really has catered a lot to this lifestyle of being able to be flexible and want. So I'm pretty thankful for that. But one thing that, you know, just the fact of being self-employed is just difficult. I think some of the biggest ones are like when those moments happen that you need to be there to take photos and you can't be there. Because with like the surf stuff, you have to kind of be ready. You have to like kind of look at storm systems and see where the waves are going to hit. You got to understand like weather patterns, what the tide's doing, what the sand looks like and all this stuff. So now not being as flexible and having a full-time job makes that a little bit hard sometimes.
Yeah.
And I think also another big obstacle is like, I think it's very hard to get into like these circles of people, getting involved with like a team or whatever. Like you really have to know someone to kind of present you or get your foot in the door. And I feel like that's been, you know, a challenge.
Yeah.
I can't just go there and be like, hey, I'm going to take photos. Like they only let people in that have an actual objective that have been sent there and stuff. You know, it was always my dream to be like the photographer working for like, you know, Quick Step or something. Like they, you know, they hire me every year and I'm just like the person and everyone knows me. So I feel like it's kind of hard to kind of, you know, break through that barrier.
It's a bit of a closed shop.
Yeah. And then, you know, I got discouraged a lot of times, and the amount of times that I've been denied or just nobody even got back to me was kind of a lot. So if you don't really have the desire or like the motivation to keep trying, like you could easily lose your spirit.
You clearly got that motivation to keep pushing.
Well, you got to just keep trying.
Yeah. Have there been any other pet challenges for you?
I guess the challenge, it was more of like a long-term like challenge I needed to solve and figure out, was even though like my day-to-day was very simple, it was very satisfying. Like I didn't really have a direction. Like I was like just kind of doing things as they came. But now that I'm kind of in this like kind of hybrid situation, I mean, I'm still working, you know, full time, but like now I like my career, but I want to kind of dial it back and do, rather than focusing on my tech career and moving up the corporate ladder, I would like to dial it back and do maybe about 65% focused on this and then 35% focused on my creative stuff. That's something that I'm actively working on, because I know the general direction where I want to go. It's just how I get there is the question. Oh, actually, I mentioned this earlier, is like kind of being, you know, true to yourself and not bending too far back for people. Mm. One of the photographers in Santa Barbara who has been a mentor for me for a long time, and he was always really supportive of me in saying like, don't charge too little for your stuff, because one, your stuff is great. Two, if you charge too little, you're undercutting the industry. You're making it harder for the rest of us, which I'd never even thought of that, you know? So
that's true.
That has still been a challenge. And that was definitely one of the bigger ones when I was getting into this, is figuring out what I thought was fair versus making money.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah,
at the end of the day, I always told myself, I'm like, they're coming to me for work because they like my stuff. If they like my stuff, like they're willing to pay for it.
Yeah. And it's good. Very good.
Thank you.
Thank you very, very much, Les. It's been wonderful having you on here.
Oh, yeah.
Is there anything you think we should have asked that we haven't asked?
Oh, I did want to make one comment about, you know, having these two different like careers is like, somebody mentioned to me like one time, because I had this opportunity to go to the Alps to go shoot this 7-day running race. It was pretty intense because, you know, you're going through the snow and stuff. I just remember talking to someone about it. And I was like, yeah, I got back Sunday night super late. And then I immediately the next morning woke up, put on my work clothes, went straight to work. And that was it. And someone was like, you went from like being Superman to like Clark Kent back in his office, like right, like doing working, sitting at a desk.
I like that comparison, Superman and Clark Kent in the office. Because they are so different what you do. You know, there's this adventure role that you've got and this role sat at a computer.
Oh, yeah. you know, the typical like professional surfer is a very different person typically than somebody I would work with in a software company. So I'd be sitting in the water there
by day. Yeah.
And then they'd be like, yo bro, so like, how was your day? And I'm like, and I'd be thinking about the meetings I had, all like the technical discussions. I was like, I don't want to really get in it. And I would just say like, it was fine.
Yeah.
Or vice versa. Right. Like I'd spend an entire weekend with a bunch of surfers or cyclists or whatever. And then I get to work and like, oh, how was your weekend? Those two worlds to me right now are still very separate.
Yeah, I can imagine. Yeah. Thank you, Les.
Yeah, thank you all.
I hope it all goes well in Spain.
Yeah, well, thanks so much. If I ever pass through the UK, which I've only been once for about 10 hours, I had a long layover there, enough to go to a pub and get fish and chips and then go back. But but if I ever do pass through the UK, I mean, it would be cool to catch up over coffee.
Definitely.
Or tea or...
Well, we're all in nice parts of the UK.
Okay.
Julie and I live in the New Forest and Beverly lives in Wales in the Brecon Beacons, and it's absolutely gorgeous there.
Oh, wow. Oh, I've heard.
I'd quite like to catch up with you, Les, in Barcelona over some tapas and a nice Rioja myself.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Well, I'll be there for 2 months. So in between training and work, I mean, I'm not going really anywhere. I'll be in the same area for the entire time.
Wonderful.
Hopefully we will catch up.
Yeah, thank you. Good luck with it all.
Thank you very much, Les. And I will say goodbye because I've kept you ages and I hope your mum's hip recovers nicely.
Oh, yeah. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Thank you, Les.
We do hope you enjoyed listening to Les and do check out his photos. You can find all the details in our show notes or you can check out our Instagram account, Unexpected Turns Pod. We won't be publishing any episodes for a couple of months. We've got quite a few other exciting adventures coming up. But when we do get back, we will be meeting up again with Chris and Gabs and some of our other guests, as well as some exciting new guests. So keep listening and thank you for all your support. Bye. Having never ridden a scooter before, with zero navigation skills, would you ride nearly 800 kilometres across Spain and France? If there are no more podcasts, you'll know why.